Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and on Double Feature today, we have Michael Kester.
I'm ready to go.
All 20 calories of Michael Kester.
Yeah, 20 calories.
You're very excited about that, aren't you?
Where'd those 20 calories
I'm
like?
I'm telling you, you got to get the equal in there.
It's a can. I'm not putting things in the can.
Oh, yeah.
I'm taking things out of the can.
See, I've already got this Starbucks on today's morning double feature.
Yeah, see.
Today's double feature is sponsored by Starbucks.
And Austin-born cold brew, high brew coffee.
Oh, wow.
Because since I live in Austin, Texas, I have to be a local freak.
Yeah.
They force you. You can't find anything else.
I have to get you the fuck out of there. Can we talk, before we talk about anything, about an actual sponsorship?
Yes.
And then,
Yes,
and is a very appropriate sponsorship today because we're talking about a friend of mine named Matt Donnelly.
Okay.
Who I met on Director's Cut.
Okay.
He played a cop and then his role got edited out of the film. And then another role was added to the film, which also happened to be a cop, and he played another one.
Different cop.
Yeah. In a scene actually with double feature executive producer Lexi Love.
Uh-huh.
So I met him on that and we've been talking about podcast stuff. We're apparently a success story because of Kickstarter.
Okay.
Which I guess
is true. You know, I mean, 3 years I wouldn't argue that at this point. I wouldn't argue that. I feel that way every single year.
I don't feel like a Kickstarter expert or anything.
No, that's definitely true. When it comes to Kickstarters, I'm always just panicking from the point you go, I think we need to do a Kickstarter, to the point where you call me and go, congratulations, you have another year of a podcast.
Right, right. Congratulations, asshole, write the schedule.
Right.
Matt has a podcast and he helped out with our Kickstarter. And so awesome. I want to talk about this.
Thank you.
He has what he describes as a funny ass podcast, which is called Ice Cream Social.
Okay.
And it is kind of a spinoff of Penn Sunday School, which is Penn Jillette's podcast, which he is also on. He is a big improv guy. I think he teaches improv still, but he's got a thing in Vegas, which unfortunately I've never been able to see, called The Bucket Show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a, you remember the glory days of Radiohead, Pay What You Want, Saul Williams, Niggy Tardust?
You call that the glory days. I call that 2007. Yeah.
Right. The horrifying days where no one made any money off music.
Right.
Did I mention we're on the iTunes store? Anyway, sorry. I'm doing a very bad job at getting this right at the top of the show. But he wrote up a deal here, which I'm going to recite verbatim.
Okay.
And then in the future, I'm going to do this more casually.
All right.
But only because I've burnt so much time talking about my love for Matt Donnelly.
All right.
Vegas's own cute, cuddly, tubby lumberjacks and award-winning comedy duo, Matt and Mattingly, put out 2 90-minute comedy podcasts a week. Don't know how the fuck they do that. Probably by not editing, right?
Also improv.
Anyway, sorry. I'm doing a bad job again. With segments that include listener email, jock versus nerd trivia contests, and I love this, fatty rabbit holes, adventures in eating. Matt is one of these guys who did this crazy Penn Jillette Ray Cronus diet and lost, I believe, 300 pounds.
Okay.
These funny fellas provide dessert for your ears.
I like that.
So look for them on iTunes or Stitcher and go direct to Matt and Mattingly, MATTINGLY.com. So yeah, they do an awesome podcast. You should check that out. We're going to actually check in on that a couple other times this year. Interested in what Matt's doing and hope he gets that Kickstarter together.
Hell yeah.
I don't know if I'm supposed to spoil that they might be doing that. Speaking of spoilers,
the show contains them, but you don't even know what movies they're for. But I'm going to tell you what movies they're for.
Please.
They're for Zombievers and they are for They Came Together, which are two great tastes that go great together.
And two movies that you should probably see before listening to this show.
Certainly.
Because we're going to talk about the movies as if you just watch them, you know everything they're about.
We're going to be very vague, and then one of us will say something that leads the other to a giggle fit, but you'll never hear the punchline.
Actually, watch the movies. Go out, see them. It just makes the show so much better. You're going to try and do it without, but don't.
You'd be wrong.
One other thing I wanted to mention is that in our people following along with the first year of Double Feature on Apple Music or on the iTunes Store remastered, you can get that now. People have been listening week to week to both this show. The kind of people who have time to do two 90-minute podcasts have been listening to this show.
Right, yeah.
And year one. And this time on year one, we were talking about Orgasmo and The Matador.
Wow, yeah.
One, I haven't thought much about The Matador since then, but I do remember it being fucking stellar and should probably watch it again. That was also the show where we talked about disappointment for Southland Tales.
Okay. And more importantly, I think most lastingly, the Hamster Style
hamster
from Orgasmo.
Style.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah, which comes up all the goddamn time. And so if you've been listening to this show for, say, 7 years,
you could say that we set it up then only to bring it back now.
Right the second, actually.
It's become its own thing.
Well, we mention these things like Hamster Style all the fucking time, and no one ever knows what we're talking about. And they almost all come from year one.
Yeah.
We have the data on this, actually. Everything is from year one, and then we stopped having original or creative ideas after that.
Well, actually, we had just separated every single trope in Hollywood filmmaking within 1 year of the show. That's what it was.
Yeah, we found them all. That's how long it takes to find them all. Oh man, is this going to be a good show to talk about that? You're just bringing it right back around to the movies here.
Been doing it for 8 years.
On the iTunes Store, search for Double Feature Year One, or go to Apple Music, and I guess also search for Double Feature Year One. The show may be available on outlets that aren't iTunes. I don't know about that. Talk to the distributor. Randomly search for Double Feature Year One in places on the internet, and maybe it'll come up. I don't know. All right. You want to do Zombievers first?
Yeah, I do.
That was a long fucking intro. Comparatively longer to the Zombievers animated intro, which is shorter, punchier, and magical.
Before we even get to the animated, magical, punchy intro to Zombievers, there's a place further back.
It's over now.
There's a place that we need to start, which is something that you and I have recently been talking about as a thing that we always are aware of but never talk about on the show. And we get to do that now. So, similarly to Kung Fury, which happened recently, Zombievers became this thing. It became a cult hit before the movie was made. They made a proof of concept trailer using archive footage and random B-roll.
I heard about that.
What the movie was about.
How fucking good of an idea is that?
And then they got two production houses to go in on the movie and give it full production. So basically, they went, we kind of want to do this movie, Zombievers. It'll look kind of like this, but this is what it looks like for free. Imagine what it could look like for $12 million.
Why aren't we doing that? That's a way smarter idea.
Right? And then two groups of people go, oh yeah, we'll give you $6 million because that will definitely be a huge... Because, you know, the obvious irony of something called Zombievers begins with the title.
Yeah, right.
It's not hard to sell after that.
And you also want to get the mental picture in your head.
The Hulu hit Thanksgiving, which unfortunately would only ever perform as much as a Hulu hit can perform, which is underperforming.
Which is that you're telling me about it for the first time.
Right.
I'm hearing about it for the first time.
Is kind of emblematic of a movie like Zombievers going, hey, we have this movie called Zombievers. And at that point, I'm not kidding you, at that point, 75% of your audience checks out and goes and sees it.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Zombievers. That's all you need.
Yeah.
The thing that's great about the actual finished product of Zombievers, and this isn't, you know, this is a minor thing, but really one of, for me, the crowning points of this movie, is that it's done in a very retro early 90s, late 80s horror way, down to the special effects, which we'll definitely get to.
Right.
But what I love about it is because it's kind of set in this old school filmmaking era, the movie poster where it's the beaver and the girl's legs are spread. And that's it. You have been baited. You've been baited into this is somehow going to be sexualized, but they never, ever go for the low hanging fruit there. But the reality is if you're setting this movie back in the, you know, heyday of animatronic horror, you couldn't make that joke in a movie that was PG-13. You know, you couldn't make a vagina joke, at least not a beaver vagina joke. One, because I don't necessarily know how many people of the younger age group would have gotten it, because, you know, you're always going for kids.
Yeah. You make your movie rated R and then you sell it to 15-year-olds.
Right, exactly.
That's the thing we just don't talk about in horror.
I just think that for me was when the movie ended, I was in my living room, so I didn't stand up, but my brain stood up and was, you know, said, good job for not making a low hanging vagina joke.
Well, it doesn't make the zombie vagina joke. It certainly makes plenty of vagina jokes. But it's also weird that vaginas are still today, I hate to call everything a taboo just because it doesn't happen, but when horror movies giggle and say they're going to have nudity and whatever, we're talking about boobs.
Boobs.
And the vagina is the, we need more synonyms for taboo.
It's the NC-17 area. That's what it is.
Which is also kind of funny because practically speaking, a vagina is less nudity. You can portray an actor's vagina without them actually being naked.
Sure.
On the set. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a censorship thing or if people are just generally less interested in vaginas than me or
what the
market is. Or
I would argue that at this point in film, there's not necessarily anything that isn't allowed to show up in an R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know we did this film is not yet rated, I believe, 7 years ago.
Right.
And I think that society has matured a little bit more since then with what's okay.
Well, no, everything just started going direct to video. Society didn't mature. We just put everything on Netflix.
So what I will say is that just because it's allowed doesn't mean people are comfortable doing it because they're afraid that it's still going to hurt them on the back end.
Yeah.
That if you stick, you know, a bunch of flopping dicks in your movie, somewhere there's this idea that moms are going to go, you can't see it.
Yeah.
That, you know, people are going to go, that's heinous and that's, you know, uncouth and that shouldn't, you could have done a film without flopping dicks.
Well, you know, there's multiple ways dicks can hurt you on the back end. Did that joke take too long? Did it take too long to get around to that?
No, that was good. That was good.
This also comes out at a perfect time because it plays to the kind of Sharknado crowd.
Right.
You know, this was an 80s thing, but it's also very much a today's thing.
But I feel like it's more earnest.
Yeah, this isn't an asylum movie. Sorry, I don't mean to say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have these movies with all these great monster covers,
mm-hmm.
whether it's exploitation or Redbox.
Right.
You've always had these. And then you show up and the monster is either not nearly as good or, you know, completely fucking absent from the...
Right.
It's just not in there, you know, at all. And Zombievers looks like... I mean, the cover's so perfect for that. The, you know, the red vector
yep.
beaver chasing bikini vagina cover. And you think, okay, and it's called Zombievers. There's a beaver literally on the cover. There's no way for them to get around this. So I'm going to turn this movie on. I'm not going to see a single zombie beaver.
And there's a little bit of mislead in the intro with the animated beavers too. You go, oh.
Right, right. These are, yeah. Oh, so now they can say there's officially beavers in the movie. I see what you're doing here. And you never think, what if the movie fucking nails it?
Right.
You know, what if the beavers are better than the animated beaver?
Mm-hmm.
What if the movie shows up and doesn't just give you the one thing they promised on the cover, but gives it to you over and over.
Sure.
And I like to go back and imagine all of those old, I don't want to call out any movies specifically, and Sharknado is a bad example because for as much as you could give those movies flack, I believe there are sharks in a tornado
mm-hmm.
sometimes in some of those, I don't know. Penn and Teller are going to be upset. I haven't seen Sharknado 3. No, they won't give a fuck.
I can't see Sharknado 3 because I haven't seen 1 and 2, and I'm holding out for 4 for a Killapalooza.
No, no asylum Killapalooza. Yeah, they will make more of those goddamn Sharknado movies. I can feel it happening now. Yeah, so that is Zombievers. We get beavers and we get, you know, you were talking about the 80s slasher thing.
Yeah.
Before we go crazy on beaver animatronics, the beaver POV shots are really just as good for me, which involve nothing. It's just that's the exploitation shot. Is what if we don't show a beaver? We just take a camera and drag it through the grass a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, reminds me of Child's Play.
Totally.
Or maybe Critters did that.
Critters.
You know, this is a very Critters kind of film.
Gremlins a little bit, yeah.
Oh, Puppet Master was, I think, the other
totally.
One.
Totally. Oh, yeah.
The 3-foot camera, you know, POV.
So the thing that's undeniably one of the best moments in the movie, or things in the movie, is that the beavers are Jurassic Park animatronics as opposed to Asylum 3D rendered cartoons.
Uh-huh.
Not that there's not a place for 3D rendered cartoons, but in this movie, if you're doing a 80s, 90s horror throwback, it can't be CG. At that point, you need, you know, robots that are beaver shaped that are limited in motion. So you have to shake the whole robot sometimes in order to achieve levels of motion that the robot is not designed to do. The thing that's great about robot shots is that when you crush a beaver and snap it in half, it still gets to move and it feels so weird. There's no level of computer generated imaging that gives you that uncanny valley of a severed animal still moving like it's not severed.
Yeah.
That's the level of attention to your puppetry and your animatronics that really brings me back to what I love about, you know, actual practical gore.
Yeah, definitely.
Practical robotic effects.
Well, you're probably thinking about the beaver being, you know, split in half on the counter.
Yeah.
The sort of poster shot.
Totally.
I mean, I guess it's not the poster shot because the beaver is fully assembled on the poster. But the moment where it starts smacking its tail and, you know, they rip the head off, and the head is the biggest mess of gore, really, I think I've ever seen. I mean, there's a couple spoiler moments I could shout out on this show, but rarely do you just have a handful of, you know,
violence.
Turkey handful of violence.
Yeah.
Falling out of your. And also, I just love the craft of these kind of effects. You know, for anybody else building, I mean, even just building a robot and then seeing it torn in half and seeing its bloody pulp victoriously head up by one of your, well, actors in this case, that would be a emotional defeat. That would be a terrible thing. There's just something weird about special effects and the movie industry where you celebrate these images that, you know, the art piece itself is, it looks like destruction. It looks like you spent all this time creating a nice, well-behaved beaver and somebody just decimated the fucking thing and is now basically pissing on your grave.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there is something strangely ironic or poetic about it.
Oh, it's so good.
It's just one of the perverse things, I think, that makes me like special effects so much.
Oh, yeah.
The way the beavers are treated in this, you know, they have this loud, agitated sound.
Yep.
It's like a piercing white noise. It's like an all spectrum onslaught of just agitated sound. And then they're also doing the rapid shutter.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've talked about it as 90 degree shutter, although that's kind of outdated because everything just runs on DSLR shutter speeds now that it's digital. But I think that was the film term. I'm a total fraud. I've never shot anything on film. I don't actually, I've never looked at a thing that says, a knob that says you are now on 90 degree shutter. I wouldn't even know where that is, actually.
Right.
Something on your, I don't even know the parts of a camera that uses film well enough to make fun of my ignorance of said device.
That's all right.
But, you know, it's the thing we talked about with 28 Weeks Later, which makes everything the Saving Private Ryan type of extra rigid, extra sharp, faster shutter,
right,
jerky motion kind of thing. And that's selling the brilliant effects that were created by Creature. Mm-hmm. By, I forget the, I think it's Creature Effects Inc.
Creature Effects Inc., yeah.
The name of the stock, but everybody calls it Creature. They did 300 and they did, I mean, if you want to talk about the old stuff, they did Child's Play and they did Army of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
The fucking skeletons, I believe, are Creature. You might want to double check on that, but I'm pretty sure that was them. And these are guys who specialize specifically in creature effects, obviously by the name, but, you know, animals and animatronics and really a mixture of puppetry. They are the perfect people to get for this.
Right.
And I think you can tell by looking at it, even the places where CG is used versus the places where the effects are practical. Just because you have a house that specializes in practical effects doesn't mean everything in the movie is going to be practical, because they're not taking care of, they're not applying makeup on set that day.
Right.
Their job is to assemble some goddamn beavers. And it's amazing the places where you do see CG, you know, where it's so often used today, like just in blood spatter and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where you don't want to dirty up actors and have to reset their looks all the time. You can compare that right against the next scene that uses these practical effects, and it almost showcases them better than it would have in the 80s.
Yeah.
By giving you that point of comparison.
Sure, totally.
By going, you know how good practical looks? It looks this good. Here's some CG blood.
Yeah.
And I just fucking love that.
So beavers aside, and what I really want to highlight with this movie, and it'll bring us gracefully into the next film. It's not lost on this movie that it is just rehashing a 100% done thing. I mean, this movie comes to the table with essentially a fucking bullet list. Goes, all right, what do we need? We need tits.
Mm-hmm.
We need a creepy hunter guy who knows more than he's letting on.
First movie that's had had nudity on double feature, I think, in a while. That I can remember anyways, although clearly my memory spans 6 days, so whatever.
I'm pretty confident Straw Dogs has nudity.
Oh, yeah.
It's got the fucking boyfriends that are just solely in it for the sex. One of my favorite things, which isn't actually on the bullet list, but is one of the funnier moments in the movie, is beavers coming up through the floor in a whack-a-mole style.
Yeah, totally.
Jab.
It would be a real missed opportunity to not have that scene.
You've got the we don't need cell phones, and you've got the friends turning on friends, and the werebeaver, which I think is way more important than people think, because it raises the stakes to a level that is far funnier than just, oh, the beavers are going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, getting your dick bit off by a beaver, that sucks. But getting your dick bit off by a beaver and then turning into a hideous werebeaver, far worse.
Sure.
I think that this movie really comes to the table with a love for these 90s, early 90s, late 80s, creature effect driven. You know, I think Critters is just a really good example. These movies that you just don't get anymore because of the prevalence of the asylum in doing these joke versions of the genre.
Right.
I like seeing Zombievers come out of the gate going, we're doing one of those movies and we're just going to do what one of those movies does. This is what this looks like in 2015. It's not a broken system. You go in there going, we're just doing another one of these. And I sit there eating it up as if I had seen it fucking 30 years ago.
Well, you got to stay true to that mixture of stolen Friday the 13th sequences and stolen, I don't know, National Geographic Channel
right.
beaver footage. That I'm sure won everybody over in the room.
And what's really funny thinking about that idea with They Came Together is that the romantic comedy genre.
I love the way, by the way, hold on. I like the way you emphasize you're not supposed to acknowledge the joke and the title. You're supposed to just gloss over it. I've never heard anybody actually lean on that correctly.
Well,
They Came Together.
They Came Together.
Everybody always goes, They Came Together. Because, you know,
no.
What is the fucking, I'm sorry, I'm supposed to have tagline mastery here. I believe it's he came, she came, they came together, something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to, it's, you know, Zombievers joke. Again, they don't make it, but it is in the title.
I approve. They Came Together.
They Came Together is this way more obvious lampooning of the romantic comedy genre, which I'll admit, save for How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days and maybe a few others, is not one close to my heart. So when you tell me we're going to make fun of romantic comedies, I kind of think maybe I won't get the jokes because I don't watch these movies. But it's David Wayne, who we saw not too long ago with Wet Hot American Summer. And it's Paul Rudd, who I am officially on the boat with Paul Rudd. After Ant-Man Now They Came Together, Paul Rudd is my guy, my go-to for laughing, hands down.
Well, and I've been learning a lot more about David Wayne since we did that show. One of the things that kind of sucks about, I mean, it's simultaneously wonderful and terrible about Double Feature, is that this is a Discovery show. It's a show where we finally watch Wet Hot American Summer.
Right.
Which is a movie we haven't seen before.
But everybody else has seen,
and we invite other people to maybe see it for the first time if they haven't. But yeah, especially in a show like that, everybody else had seen it, we hadn't. And so while that should be a show where we go on and go, here's a bunch of stuff about David Wayne and we're experts on Wet Hot American Summer and blah, 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 but that's just not our show.
Right.
We go on and we go, whoa, this was really good. Why haven't we seen this?
Sure.
We kind of wander out in a daze every time.
And I think that that's kind of a nice dynamic for our show, is that the first time we see a director, we don't inundate Podmanity with, this is this director. We go, we kind of open the vault door after 30 years right, of fallout right. on this movie.
Peek in.
And then finally we see the second one, and anybody who's following along, watch the movies, gets to kind of see similarities between two of the movies, and we get to go, this is what the director does. At the same time, the audience is hopefully going, oh, I see where these are similar and where they're different and why they're funny and why this one's much funnier than the last one, hypothetically, but also entirely in this case.
Well, and I think rarely do we get to do them so back to back. We're getting a lot of opportunities for that this year. And, you know, it's right after doing a movie on the show that I often get super excited about somebody and want to learn everything about them, or just that thing that happens where you're thinking about something or talking about something, so you see it everywhere.
Right, totally.
You go to buy a new car and then suddenly the models of car you're looking at are all over the road.
It's called the Ford David Wayne.
No, that's not where I was going with that. Wayne started in the state MTV, which I had actually never seen or heard of.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But
what is MTV?
Yeah, you don't get very, very far in the David Wayne search without seeing this sort of, what is it? Lonely Island, right? The, the comedy troupe.
Sure. When I made you do Hot Rod.
Yeah, the state kind of reminds me of that.
Okay.
It's, yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
The state is sort of a troupe that came together for MTV.
Okay.
When MTV first started doing, you know, music videos are over.
Okay.
Original shows are in.
Now you say that, and I can tell you, having seen just these two David Wayne movies, who I'm assuming was in that group.
Well, there's also Stella, which maybe you saw on Comedy Central, which is a little more recent.
I didn't see that.
See, I think that's 10 years after The State and 10 years before today. I'm going to randomly make up a time for that.
Okay.
Michael Ian Black and...
Michael Ian Black.
But sorry, this isn't a Stella show. Let's just tag that and then run away from it. So I think David Wayne's first, you know, feature to direct was Wet Hot American Summer, and then went on and did stuff with Stella and Role Models.
Uh-huh.
The most recent one is probably Children's Hospital.
Wanderlust fairly recently too.
That's also true. Also true. So, you know, you can find a lot of his stuff showing up in the ether, especially
if you look at Paul Rudd's filmography.
There is a lot of Paul Rudd that's in that.
Didn't David Wayne do Halloween 6 too?
No, I don't think so.
I'm kidding. There's no way in hell.
No, who did? I was like, what? Everybody did Halloween 6. I first heard of They Came Together before even seeing or knowing anything really about David Wayne, because it was one of these movies that came out on iTunes before, during the theatrical release.
Okay.
And Netflix shortly after.
Yeah.
I mean, it really didn't wait, you know, terribly long for that. And it started getting this buzz. You know, it came out so quickly that you kind of went, oh, I don't know what this is. It looks like a romantic comedy.
Right.
And then you would start hearing the things about Now you should see it. It's a surprise. And finding out, okay, there might be, what's this They Came Together thing?
Yeah.
It looks like a rom-com, but there's something to it.
Yeah.
You don't get very far in the movie.
Looks like a Woody Allen movie. Starts like a Woody Allen movie.
Before they, the third character is New York.
I know. Well, that scene, so when that scene started.
I think we said that verbatim.
I know.
For Woody Allen episodes, didn't we?
When I was watching this, this was the second time I had seen it. But admittedly, the first time I had seen it, I don't think we had really gotten to the meat of the Woody Allen thing, or maybe I wasn't quite paying attention. So when I watched it again this time, this was one of those moments that I talk about every now and again where I wish we were still watching the movies together.
Yeah, I know.
Because that was a moment where I just wanted to just like pause it and crack up with you. Like, oh my God, we just watched six of these. We watched fucking six of these as homework last year. And now somebody's going, we love premarital sex.
Right.
And it's just the moment that we've been, you know, it's the payoff. It's the extra credit. And it's so funny.
Another great reason to watch the movies, not to keep fucking harping on that or anything. Not like something especially set us off this week.
I think that this show, you know, these two movies are a really good example of why to watch the movies.
Yeah.
Because when you watch They Came Together with the experiences that we've had watching movies for fucking 8 years, it's a goddamn gift.
Yeah, it is.
Because somebody is nailing every trope that we don't even realize we've been watching for 8 years.
Right, because we don't call them out.
Right.
It's not like horror where, I mean, all fucking horror is self-referential now.
Yeah.
You're not even doing anything special by going, look at this trope. Look at the, you know, we've talked about movies like Cabin in the Woods, but even that movie, most people come to it and go, oh, it's a send up
right.
of,
sure.
you know,
sure.
calling out these cliches. But if you're really into horror, you know that Cabin in the Woods had to actually elevate itself a couple more levels to even be mildly relevant.
Right, totally.
You can't just run out on the screen and point at something and go, horror movies do this all the time.
Right.
Because today that's just called any horror movie.
Right, yeah. You have to, I mean, it's funny.
And
it's funny.
We don't get to see that in the romantic comedy genre.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the thing that I like about They Came Together is that I have seen the comedy version, the lampoons of rom-coms, but they fall too far in line. Because here's the thing. Here's the line you walk, right? Is I want to do a romantic comedy, but I want to make fun of romantic comedies with it. And in doing one and the other, you always fall too far into the, this is actually just a romantic comedy that's a little self-aware, or this is actually just an absurdist comedy that pretends it's doing the rom-com thing.
Yeah.
I feel like They Came Together manages to somehow walk the line where you never lose sight of either side of that story. You're going, this is lampooning romantic comedies, but it is in and of itself a romantic comedy. It gets away with a crazy sword wielding Michael Shannon. But by that point, I go, this happens in all these movies, doesn't it?
Right. Oh my God. It's so fucking good. The tell me about it loop is probably, this is one of those things that I'm starting to feel like only David Wayne has the balls to do. This would be a gag that anybody would do. The tell me about it joke is itself.
Sure.
Already a thing that makes fun of itself.
Sure.
There are other movies, other stories.
You can say that again. You know, that joke, that's a fucking,
exactly.
That's a Leslie Nielsen gag, Airplane style.
Well, now every time you hear somebody go, you could say that again in a comedy, you wait to, you know, you wait with your hands ready to applaud if they don't take advantage of the low hanging fruit.
Right. Right.
As you would say. If they don't go, you know, if they don't just fucking parrot themselves, or even better, if they make a different joke that you're not expecting. And David Wayne goes, I'm going to fucking do this till it's funny.
Yeah.
Really to the point where you're going, oh my God, are we just going to do this for the next 40 minutes?
Right.
Is this the rest of the film? Is we get caught in this glitch? that appears like maybe it's just the same. The editing of this movie is astonishing.
Sure.
But that it just may be the same footage. It's not even alternate versions of the thing. I'll have to go back and see it. Do you know anything actually about the way this movie was put together?
I have no idea.
David Wayne edited this movie. I guess he did a complete kind of re-edit.
Okay.
Of the entire film. It originally didn't have the framing device. And as he was editing, there were scenes
with Bill Hader.
Yeah. The Woody Allen,
the table
Melinda,
scene. Yeah.
Melinda
oh,
device.
God. So good.
Yeah. So it plays through and he gets to moments that drag and wishes he could just cut them out. And goes, well, you know, then how do we jump from here to here? We're just missing entire things in the story. The secret that I found through the double feature movie is you can just cut out anything you want and people just, they don't know what's missing.
Right.
So they don't give a fuck. But watch people, you know, peg us now on that.
Yeah.
But instead, he comes up with this scene, goes back to the studio and goes, I need one more scene. Let me bring the actors back to just sit at this table. And what's beautiful about it is it really feels like the actors doing, you know, almost a commentary on the movie, as if they filmed the movie
sure.
a year ago. Now they're coming back to all remember the experience.
Yeah.
Which is exactly the motivation
which,
you need.
I was going to say, right. Which rings very true for the idea.
It's exactly what you need to kind of method through the scene.
Yeah. And I love too that whole thing ends with, anyway, so we got divorced and it was terrible. And,
right,
you know,
right. Well, he doesn't just write it in order to allow himself the excuse to,
right.
to remove scenes or whatever. He also makes gags. He doesn't forget that it has to be funny.
Right.
Which could be so easy to do. Because you're not the writer at that point. You're the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just going, how do we fix continuity problems? I'll write up a scene full of excuses and
right.
cut to it every once in a while. And he goes, no, it has to have jokes too. There has to be a payoff for why we're in this scene. Which, I mean, it's just such an easy thing to forget. And the fact that he remembers it and takes advantage of it specifically for comedic ends, it's one of the things that shows the kind of levels the guy's operating on.
Mm-hmm.
Really, I think the whole cast, I mean, I think they all
sure.
in those performances totally see what they're doing with it.
Right.
It's also, I mean, I keep using a term like ballsy, but to have the courage to just go, this is going to change a lot in editing, so I'm just going to remake the whole fucking movie. I mean, that it's not just a bookends thing. They cut back to it every once in a while. It becomes the main layer of the movie.
Sure.
It's the reality you're operating in.
Right.
That makes everything else look like a flashback. It really recontextualizes the entire movie.
Right.
So where you used to have a movie about a different thing. And then for him to just rebuild the whole fucking movie, you know, on his personal computer, just this guy, I'm gonna edit this whole thing differently, go back, film another thing, and then blow it apart and reorganize it all. I don't know, it's a courageous thing.
Well, and I think that it takes what could be a bonehead comedy,
yeah, well, definitely
turns
definitely.
It into something way more cerebral, because eventually by including this table scene, the table through line, you open up the conversation of, so is this actually the way the story goes? Is this some depiction of their poor storytelling? Are they romanticizing their story? And you get to purchase your reality when you're watching the film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get to go, okay, so maybe that didn't happen exactly. Especially when you get to scenes like the wild sex scene that ends with Bill Hader going, oh man, I don't even know how'd you get her to do that thing where she right, jumped on your face? Right. And he goes, I didn't say that at all. And then you realize
it's Ghost of Mars. It's my fucking Ghost of Mars fantasy again.
Right.
In fact, when we covered that,
you start realizing, well, I guess I just watched a scene in somebody else's mind that wasn't even the reality. And I know that it's stupid to go and sit and watch They Came Together and go, so what's the layer of reality here? Did Christopher Maloney really shit himself? Or is that just what people are assuming? You know, that kind of thing. But I just feel like it allows for the comedy to go that extra mile when it might not be 100% the realm of reality that the film is operating on. You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
You can have the bartender continue to ask the questions. You can have Paul Rudd and his brother continue to turn around and do the final goodbye thing.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Something like something that would have seemed like a really dumb scene, albeit still hilarious, which is the dressing up that tiny set of New York to look like Boston, where they just say Mark Wahlberg, you know, that it just arrows pointing to things in Boston.
Right.
That could have just seemed like, come on, I thought we were a little bit smarter than that move. But then you think about, well, this is just Paul Rudd going, and then I went to Boston. And somebody goes, okay. And he goes, you know, so I was in Boston and people were all Mark Wahlberg and Celtics and, you know,
right.
The cabs were green.
Right.
And that suddenly just becomes okay to make that joke because it's the reality that you're operating on is now heightened to a point where it's through a second lens, you know, it's through another filter and all jokes become okay.
Well, then you don't blame David Wayne for anything. Right. You blame Paul Rudd's
right.
character.
It becomes a version of Telephone.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Where it's all you get to just go, well, maybe he didn't. And not that I do. I'm not saying that I sit there and go, okay, so we do know that he didn't show up with a sword because I do believe right. that because that's the actual story, because that's what you're showing me and that's the joke and that's fine. But I just think that having the very grounded and, you know, debatably grounded, but very grounded through line at the table really sets the mood to go more over the top when you're in your storytelling mode.
Yeah, right. Yeah, things like hanging out the window or some of the more, you know, absurd parts of it. Not that I don't think they would have worked anyways. I think it's impossible to say. You don't know what the movie looks like without the table scene.
Right, totally.
Or we just don't have that movie, so I don't know. But I like that they go the crazy directions and they will do, you know, a hang out the window or
dressing in armor.
Calling out something like the corporate enemy candy place.
Sure.
I mean, these are, you know, we don't get to do this in horror a lot anymore because, like I said, we call out to it so often that we're talking about this with a movie like Zombievers, which is getting applauded because it's not drawing arrows and circles around itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're so many layers deep in the self-referential that now we're going, but do it like you don't know you're self-referential.
Right. Wouldn't it be refreshing to just do it for real?
Right. I know. Right. That's, that's how often we see this, but we're still at a point with romantic comedies where it hasn't been done really well. There's still a activism part of this. There's still an expose part of this.
Sure.
Where, so I was talking about the, you know, the corporate enemy thing, the corporate candy store. That is such a fucking trope, not just in romantic comedies, but in a lot of movies where you have this corporate enemy. And it's bullshit. It's just, it's a fucking lazy cliche of movies that nobody ever calls out, except to do it with a little bit of a wink in their own movie. And I think in a movie that is drawing big red circles around things, it's one of those moments that makes me go, you know, okay, so here Paul Rudd's character, one of our main characters, works for this corporation. It's enough to make an audience kind of go, oh yeah, why do we always blame the corporation? Mm-hmm. And look at the people who are working there. There's some of our characters and it's, I don't know, you know.
They play football just like the people in the room, just like our everyday Joes.
Well, not to say that they're, you know, they're super everyday because it's also cartoony and stuff at points, but
right.
More just to go, aren't we tired of seeing this
sure.
trope? After a movie like They Came Together comes out and does these things, audiences do get smarter.
Right.
They do.
Well, because
this is Scream for romantic yeah, comedies. They're going to start watching these and going,
right.
Yeah. I don't do this though. Haven't you seen They Came Together? This is old now. This is hack.
Right. Right.
Do something better.
Sure.
It elevates the genre. I think one of the best things you could probably say about a movie, which means it's time for us to leave.
Doublefeature.fm. That's the website now. Not the old website. That's the website. If you want to email us, however, that has remained the same. That will be doublefeatureshow@icloud.com.
You don't know the producers.
I was actually going to go ahead and give one more shout out to Matt Donnelly for his...
Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Thank you for that. And then there are also a list of other people who are also responsible for this show as well as the show next week.
No, different people for that show. These people, they have their moment now and then we're going to forget about them for 7 days. Kidding. Brianna Kruger, Rod Fielder, Seth Hanasek, Enrique, David Koch, and Leah Napolitano. Coke? Well, I guess we're going with Coke.
And you switch his name any way you want. That's hilarious.
I know. It just every week. Holy fuck. Next time on the show.
Next time on the show is a double feature that I stuck together with the theme, what's her deal? I think that that's a great theme. Right. I think that that's a good theme for these two movies. Because that's kind of what you're wondering the whole time.
Yeah, it is. And I think it throws you for a loop a little bit. Watch these two together. If you usually don't watch the movies back to back or whatever, it is a really interesting experience doing. Right. It's Under the Skin first. And the second one is Spring. It's the Spring from 2014.
Right. Which is Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, whom we did with Resolution not so long ago. They're also responsible for one of the VHS viral shorts, which was kind of the shit.
Yeah, I saw that.
The thing about these two movies is that they're both widely critically acclaimed, but not in the same places, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both pretty easy to get a hand on because they're new. And you should watch them.
All right. So I said I'd talk about this other thing. I'll keep it really short. I listen to a lot of podcasts and I don't know the hosts. I just listen to them. But you get this feeling like you know them, like you're friends. And they've never fucking met you. And this was a weird social oddity that we sort of wrote Double Feature, the movie about, which you'll eventually get to see. But whether people write into our show and we have that relationship, or they help put the show together and we have that relationship, or they just listen and I don't know they exist, despite not knowing about their existence, I still feel like they're my friends. And so something's going on and I just want to tell people about it. I left a stable place in my life in Silicon Valley to move out to LA, which is complete chaos, and try and pursue a dream. And you know, you have a lot of false starts in filmmaking and it's embarrassing and it's tough to scrape by. So, I mean, I don't come on the show very often and talk about these little things because they often turn into nothing, these little projects. But sometimes they do turn into something. And I've been working on something for a while now and it's starting to look real. And real people who I really admire, who I'm starstruck by, are starting to get involved. But, you know, it's scary. And I'm glad that I have you guys here listening. It means more to me than you understand. It really does. And hopefully I'll have something to tell you really soon. All right. Can you bail me out of here?
Watch more fucking film.
Thank you. Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.